Was it really just 300 Spartans versus the entire Persian army? Did Alexander the Great really believe he was a god? Was the Tower of Babylon a real place? If you've ever been watching a movie, a TV show, reading a book, maybe even playing a video game that set itself in our own history, you may have asked some of these questions. The Grimdark History Podcast looks to explore that intersection between history and popular fiction, and we want to get to the nitty-gritty details and answer those questions while exploring all the fun, fascinating, and interesting things in our own history. Come check out the Grimdark History Podcast.
You never underestimate the power of a generation of Goonies latchkey kids.
Do I look like the mayor of Tokyo to you?
Just let me die.
That would have been perfect.
How about the power of puberty?
You know, you kind of look like a Goomba.
Now, what about Handjob Johnny? He's a bad guy.
Oh, yeah, we're going to nerd out today.
Hello, and welcome to Movie...
Hello, and welcome to Movie Smash, the show where we dive headfirst into comic book movies outside the MCU. If you're new to the show, thanks for joining us. If you've been here before, you know the drill. Each episode, we're going to smash through a movie whose source material is a graphic novel or a comic. Is it worth revisiting? Should it be forgotten? Let's find out. This is Movie Smash. I'm one of your hosts, Chris Roberts. I'm the founder of Off-Panel Creations. With me today, I have Jeremy Parmentier.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Parmentier, also of the Retrovaniacs podcast, and I'm the older version of Jeremy in a podcast with a newer version of Jeremy.
Also with us today, we have Fergal Amayo.
I wish I had a cool line like that. This is about Fergal Amayo. This is about preserving that with great power comes great responsibility. And I'm here to do that today.
Jeremy kind of alluded to it earlier, but today we have a special guest from the Grimdark podcast, Jeremy Agnew. Hey, Jeremy.
Thank you very much. Yes, hello. And I'm new Jeremy for an episode.
Well, welcome, new Jeremy.
Yeah.
How are we going to differentiate? Let me just get that out of the way before we go. Are we going to call it Jer 1, Jer 2?
So there's a few Jeremys at my work, and I'm referred to as J.A.
J.A.
Jeremy. Or my friends call me Jer Bear.
Jer Bear.
That reminds me, Jeremy, of your podcast, Retrovaniacs, when you guys early on had different versions of Jeremy for you and one of your co-hosts. And you tried that for three episodes that did not go well.
Not even three. We made it through one before I was like, no one's ever called me JP in my entire life. I don't know why I thought I would recognize that as my nickname. Yeah. Yeah. I made this smart call of being on a podcast with another guy named Jeremy. Super smart.
So we've been through this before. So Jeremy's and Jeremy's is all good all the way around. But our movie tonight is 2012's The Amazing Spider-Man, starring Andrew Garfield, Emma Stone, and Steve Kloves, directed by the perfect name for a director for a Spider-Man movie, Mark Webb.
Heck yeah.
Tell us a little bit about yourself, Mr. Parker. What did your father do, Peter?
Well, I never really knew my father. My parents left when I was very young.
Peter, someday you'll understand.
Did you tell the boy about his father?
Dr. Connors, I'm Richard Parker's son.
If you want the truth about your parents, Peter, come and get it.
Before we sort of jump into it, you knew Jeremy. Why did you pick this movie?
I am a huge fan of Spider-Man. It was my first ever comic that I collected. And I actually, just before the show, I still have my comic book collection. I'm a 46, 47-year-old man, and I still have my comics. But I have Amazing Spider-Man number 34 and number 56, like from the original version run. So I love my Spider-Man. That's why I picked this one.
Well, you're in good company. I think everyone on this podcast has some comic book collection.
Yeah. Excellent.
Yes. Spider-Man is actually some of my most... I have first appearance of Rhino. I have first appearance of Medusa, first appearance of Madame Web. It's truly... I mean, you know, interestingly enough, what we're talking about happens to be, if I may be so bold, the most popular superhero of all time.
I'd go with Batman, but, you know, that was kind of...
No, actually, this is not me talking about it. I did some digging on this because I thought it was Batman. I know this is the top 3-4, but consistently, there were over 200 billion views of Spider-Man videos last month. Over 5.5 million searches last month alone of just Spider-Man. There is no other superhero that even comes close.
So I guess that kind of answers my next question for you guys. Are you familiar with the character Spider-Man?
No.
No, you stole my line. That's my normal answer. No, I never heard of him. But yes, no, of course. We're all very familiar with Spider-Man, as everyone's already said. They've read the issues. The guy who doesn't like any popular comics, enjoy Spider-Man comics. So I think we're all very familiar with the character.
Are you telling me Jeremy stole Jeremy's joke? Or was it Fergal?
Oh, this Fergal. Fergal stole Jeremy's joke.
Fergal stood just, you know, that's how it's I like, sneak
the,
in.
Did I make a joke that I missed?
It's the lack of cameras. So for this movie, though, The Amazing Spider-Man, was this your first time watching it?
I own it all. I own every Spider-Man movie in conceivable existence. Because I have a son. And I think anyone who has a son has a lot of Spider-Man movies on their shelf.
Yeah, I own the DVD for this. I've watched it many, many times.
Yes.
Actually, this is the first time I've watched this Spider-Man, any Spider-Man movie with Andrew Garfield. I don't know why I didn't watch them before now, but this is the first time I viewed this one. But I'm not a big fan of Spider-Man. I liked the previous Spider-Man movies. I just, for whatever reason, never watched these.
Did you follow up with Amazing Spider-Man 2? Because you had to. I know you did. Because like it just you had to fast forward the knowledge base.
I mean, I didn't yet because I want to talk about this one tonight, but I'm going to watch The Amazing Spider-Man 2.
Maybe it was picked for a later episode. But for me, this was actually my second viewing of this movie. The first time was last year.
Oh, nice. What prompted last year's viewing?
The reason was because with my kids, we were going to watch the new Spider-Man movies, and I knew there was the crossover event for the third and final one. So I had to go out and get all the other Spider-Man movies because the releasing for them, they're all on different streaming channels, and you never know what's available. So I had actually only seen this one and number two just last year.
That's an excellent excuse to have a Spider-Man binge watch, though.
Yeah, I don't think they'd appreciate it as much as I did, but I think I might do that again.
This was actually one of the movie nights at our store. It's one of our more popular movie nights at the store. We had about 50. So Chris, you would know, we used to do movie nights at the store. So we would inflate a 25-foot screen. We had a cul-de-sac. People could roll their car up, sit in chairs. We provide soda and popcorn and watch movies that don't suck. And this is one of them.
That sounds like an awesome time.
It is a very awesome time.
So, Fergal, I think most of our audience knows who Spider-Man is, but there have been a ton of different runs of the character. Is there a significant difference between Spider-Man and like The Amazing Spider-Man or?
You know, I think it's another vehicle for Spider-Man. Amazing Spider-Man. It's a Silver Age. It's 1963. It's going all the way through. I mean, you've got Miles Morales, you've got Ultimate Spider-Man, Astonishing Spider-Man, Marvel Team-Up, Spectacular Spider-Man. I mean, you're just the web of Spider-Man. So, I mean, and Spider-Man Unlimited, Untold Tales of Spider-Man, Sensational Spider-Man, which I actually enjoy, Marvel Knights Spider-Man. So you've got so many different tales. There's not really, I think they all tend to follow the same line. And if you've ever watched the Miles Morales Spider-Man, the Spider-Verse, you would know that the web, the great web, that these Spider-Men are all attached to all tend to follow a very similar line.
So every one of the Spider-Men are on a different universe? Are they all just the same? Like Detective Comics versus Batman, it's supposed to be the same Batman. But are you telling me like these are different Spider-Men?
No, they're kind of the same, just different. I mean, they portray them differently, different heroes. They might not all cross over. I mean, I guess if you want to get technical, we could get into that. That's multiverse and string theory. But I don't think we're going to have a discussion. I think we'll lose the audience about 10 minutes into this conversation.
And I'm not a big fan of multiverse. Let's move on. Quick spoiler warning for you. If this is your first time joining us, just a heads up. We're going to discuss several elements of the story that might be considered spoilers, especially for this overly rebooted movie franchise. So consider yourself warned. So Jeremy, would you like to walk us through the plot of the movie?
Sure. I think everybody knows the origin of Peter Parker. He's an everyday nerdy teen. He's beat up by bullies. He's awkward around the girl he likes. He gets bitten by a genetically engineered spider and gains spider-like superhuman abilities. He navigates teen angst, figuring out his abilities, and trying to find out who his uncle's murderer is. All at the same time, he's caught up in a plot that first is supposed to be poisoning elderly people, and then later the entire city, and then he has to deal with the lizard.
The lizard.
Jeremy, how'd he do?
I mean, I think that was much better than the summary I was about to give, so that's perfect.
Okay, so why don't we start with the titular Spider-Man? How did Andrew do?
Well, before we get to that, we say it like it's like a normal thing because it really is somewhat of that's what made this book so spectacular. Normal kid bit by a radioactive spider. Wow, now he's got the proportional strength and Spider-Man of a spider. It's just amazing, right? But what I did enjoy about this movie was they actually gave a great scientific explanation, which you wouldn't find out in this movie. And I won't ruin it for everyone else for the next movie, but I think that makes this movie awesome, is that there is a grounding in science on some of this stuff, which I think is pretty dope. But I think he did well. He's Andrew Garfield.
Well, I'd say this Spider-Man is definitely a more techie Spider-Man than the previous trilogy. So, like, I like your take on the science. Like, it feels more science-y, because I think that's true, too. Like, he doesn't develop web shooters out of his wrists. He has to build those web shooters.
Although he does somehow get that giant box of bio cable.
How? That was the only plot hole, and I, like, stopped, because I knew we were going to talk about this.
Yeah.
Either Jeremy 1 or Jeremy 2 was going to bring this up, if not Chris. So I needed to understand this. How was he able to get a, like, basically the equivalent of a spider nuclear weapon delivered to his apartment?
Yeah, like, I think that had to be, like, at least $20,000 of, you know, ultra strong, super small cable, sticky cable.
I'm just wondering what was he, was it Bitcoin going on at that
point? I was about to say that it was Bitcoin.
did he still have the security card from the guy he swiped it on when he snuck into the building and then later went back in?
That's another plot point. See, this, you pay attention, Jeremy. I feel you. You catch the little details.
Oh yeah, we're gonna nerd out today.
I think we all just missed the opportunity to make a dark web joke, but we'll go with it. We'll go ahead forward.
Okay, let's talk about Uncle Ben. He's classic for all these movies. Did you enjoy this version of Uncle Ben?
I was influenced by The West Wing, so it was a thing. I was influenced by The West Wing. So, you know, when I was looking at it, I was like, that's the president. And it just kind of, but he definitely played the role of Uncle Ben. Actually, I think he was, again, another more grounded Uncle Ben. The Tobey Maguire Uncle Ben, I don't know, like, don't start without me. Don't start with me. I mean, that just feels like we're living in, that more feels like the 1960s version of Spider-Man.
Obviously, Sheen has played many, many characters and can play many characters, but I actually thought his portrayal felt more like the father from Wall Street.
That might have been something else.
What about Connors?
I thought it was awesome. I think he pulled out of the comic book great, great. And I'm not sure how to pronounce his name. But the actor is amazing. I think the caliber of acting in general, everybody there is either Oscar nominated or Oscar winners. They all did great. And I loved all the actors, but Lizard did awesome.
Yeah, I think they did just enough on the special effects. They actually did a really good job on the special effects. I actually was concerned because the heavy is too heavy. It's an origin movie, but that's a pretty big ass heavy. But I think it plays into the science side, and it would have been awesome had they gone the direction they were going to go with that.
I do like the fact that their backstories are intertwined. I always enjoy when I'm not a big fan of origin stories, and we'll get into origin stories in a bit. But when we do have an origin story, I like the fact that when the villain and the hero's backstories intertwined, it feels more cohesive, for lack of a better word.
Yeah.
All I know from Spider-Man is what I learned from the cartoon. Isn't the lizard supposed to have a bigger face in that?
Yeah, it's more alligator-like, isn't it?
Yeah, it definitely wasn't the best version of what you'd see. He looks kind of like a dinosaur person in the comics, but I actually thought that making him look like a human that had turned into a lizard person, it actually kind of worked in this. To go back to Fergal's previous comments, I think everybody in this movie did a really good job of actually taking this seriously. Like, it wasn't people were like, just come show up to get a paycheck, really. And I thought that Dr. Connors, really, in general, was done well. You actually felt like he was, he had a real reason for taking the trial, aside from just because he's a scientist and he wants to test his trial. He's got his personal reasons. He's got his professional reasons. And then when it goes awry, you kind of feel bad for him at the same time, right? He actually manages to make you feel like, you know, like he's not a true bad guy. He's not, you know, I was kind of happy that it wasn't Dr. Octopus again. Again, I thought he was great in previous movies. But I was glad he wasn't Spider-Man's foil like you'd expect, I guess, for any introductory Spider-Man movie. So I was happy to see that it was the lizard and that they did a good job making him more than one dimension.
They actually left him with the jacket on. If you guys ever pay attention to the comics, yes. The only thing they missed was the purple pants, but they kept the jacket on, which was, I think, a throwback. And to that point, I think that's something interesting. Again, this was a tech-driven, like, it was about Oscorp, but it wasn't it wasn't Norman Osborn. It was never going to be about Norman Osborn in this movie. But it was Oscorp, but rather than Oscorp being this weapons maker, and I guess they were biological weapons making, which was really damn cool.
it was kind of interesting. There were sort of two characters that I felt were missing. One, Oscorp, right? Osborns. And then Jonah Jameson being another character, which was just missing from this universe.
That's because Gwen Stacy was too busy being hot.
Well, and also, he's still in high school here. So who?
Yes.
Jonah Jameson doesn't show up till he leaves high school and becomes this little plucky photographer.
And all the groundwork is laid, right? He has the camera is a big piece of his character in the role. It has a focus in the story as well. So it shows that he's going to be a professional photographer of some sort. So it ties into, you know, in the next movie, perhaps he's there, right? I haven't seen the Amazing Spider-Man 2, but in general, you know, he's in the Spider-Man universe. But yes, to Jeremy A's point, he is still in high school, so he wouldn't know the newspaper editor.
I did like the fact they went with Gwen Stacy versus Mary Jane.
That's the alternate version. That's where, because there are versions of Spider-Man where he does not fall in love with Mary Jane Watson. He's with Gwen Stacy. So that is truly not, that's actually, again, this was, I mean, that's why Stan Lee was in this movie. It was an homage to Stan Lee's character, original character. You know, Amazing Fantasy 15 was the intro of Spider-Man. And by the way, fun fact to you, so you know, he was going to quit or was about to be fired, one of the two, when he went home and told his wife, Joan, I'm about to be fired. And she's like, well, why don't you just make your damn book before you get fired? And that's what he did. Him and Steve Ditko just decided, like, he had a story. Steve Ditko had a pen. And boom, must number one comic ever. Just like the biggest comic at that time ever.
Yeah, and Gwen Stacy was the original love interest.
That's right.
Until, spoiler alert, she dies. And then... And then you get Mary Jane in the later comics as his new love interest.
What's interesting too, like reviews at the time, so there was like no chemistry between Andrew Garfield and Emma Stone.
I disagree.
They dated afterwards. Like they literally, they had so much chemistry. They Mr. and Mrs. Smith the shit out of that relationship afterwards.
Yeah. And I thought they did an amazing job of just having the awkward teenage love interest of, I don't know about you, but I was horribly awkward in high school and trying to ask a girl out and then the girl themselves being awkward about it. Like that scene that brought me right back to high school. And I thought that was great.
Well, since Jeremy's known me since high school, he'll tell you I was a Casanova the entire time.
Oh yeah. I mean, you can edit it out when I tell you the truth, but yeah, that's fine. That's true. You can say that.
I had an alter ego in high school called Patrick because we didn't go by Fergal because that would not let me in the front door. But I did go by Patrick, and that guy was suave A.
So let's talk about some of the stuff that actually happens in this movie. One thing I want to bring up to you guys is that there's a series of flashbacks about the parents that seems to go nowhere. It's a little sort of hints at things, but do you think that was necessary?
It does go somewhere. You just have to see the second movie. It does go somewhere. It just doesn't go. About
this movie. This movie.
Well, they didn't give you, they gave you an, so that's where, if anything, that's where this movie, there's, it's a much bigger story to tell as it pertains to Peter's father, as it pertains to Oscorp, as it pertains to the formula of the bag. There's just a whole lot that they're not telling you. I think that's where they made it ambitious, gave you a lot of hanging chads, but you know, at one, some point you got to take the chad off.
And it's also the mystery thing that drives Peter Parker to Kurt Connors.
Right, exactly. It's a better connection for him to show up and Kurt Connors not only able to, you know, his interest in Connors, but Connors in any way giving him the time of day. It's not just some kid. He's his previous partner's son, right? So that gives him a reason to kind of work a little closer with him realistically than if he was just some high school kid that was really into genetics.
Did he not recognize him when he answered the door? I think he actually did, if I'm not mistaken, in the movie. When he opened the door, he was like, Peter Parker.
No, he thought he was the other guy. Because remember when he's at the
oh, yeah.
Okay. In Oscorp, he had the other name. Yeah. So he thought it was that other character. And he's like, actually, I'm, you know, Parker's son. I forgot his dad. Richard Parker. I mean, Richard Parker's son. So it that was cool. And like then it was the realization of who he was. And like I thought that was a good connection. And there are definitely points in the movie where they do hint back, including the, you know, the post-credit scene spoilers, where they talk more about his parents. So you know they're laying groundwork for future content, but the connection to Connors really makes that make more sense to have this background with his parents.
And he basically said, if it wasn't to your dad's breakthrough with the spiders, that changed everything. If guys pay attention to that line, that really was pretty well. That was a nice little Easter egg being laid out in front of you.
And speaking of spiders, he goes in that one chamber that has all this, the big sort of where they're making all the threads, I guess. It's like where he finds a spider that lands on him.
Doesn't that concern you, though, that there was no lock on that door?
And there's nothing holding the spiders in place.
That was the biggest concerning thing. Are they just going to let these suckers roll around?
First off, there was a finger pad. There was a pad there where he had to mimic what the other guy did, what Raj or whatever his name was.
Yeah, that was to get in there, but not the second level. Like, there's more than one level of security when you're dealing with biochemical spiders.
I think spiders themselves are the level of security. I mean, how many people are going to walk in a room full of spiders?
There's nothing holding the spiders where they are. So what? Why are there not thousands of spiders crawling all over the floors and everything in that room?
Why are they not mating with other spiders and making monsters so we have a horror movie come out of it? I don't understand it.
The scene is horror movie enough because that just triggered my arachnophobia.
So, Chris, you said no one would go into a room full of spiders. I digress, sir. If that allowed me to get mutated powers, I would go in the room
with spiders. But you don't know that.
Well, no, I do because I've seen the second movie. But to all those who haven't seen the second movie, I might grow a third arm. And you know what? I'd live with that if I could jump around.
Or you just might get cancer and die.
Isn't that a plot of one of the Family Guy episodes?
That is actually a problem.
Probably. Yeah.
Pretty much every Family Guy episode. Or South Park.
How'd you guys feel about the... Now, this, like, we keep going back to this is an origin story. So they've got to have the cliche of him discovering his powers. What do you think of that scene?
He was a boarder. He was a complete skateboarder. So it leaned into his ability to jump up and down and be a kind of an edgy skateboarding kid. It leaned into that. He was much better at the web the first go. I'll tell you that. He was much better at the web.
I really felt the warehouse scene had like a, what was that movie? With Kevin Bacon, Footloose?
Yeah, I totally got Footloose vibes from the warehouse scene. I thought for sure he was just waiting for the music to start. And him to just kind of break out into emotional dance.
Wow. I don't even know what to say to it. How do you even follow that up?
I also really liked the bus scene when he first wakes up. The guy wakes him up on the bus and he has his powers. He doesn't realize that he has them. And so he's just uncontrollably doing things. I thought that was pretty cool for a way to like kind of figure, have his, oh, I have some sort of powers moment. I mean, it was a little slapsticky, but I didn't mind that too much. But I just like the fact that it wasn't just like, you know, the slower him sitting at home and all of a sudden he shoots a web out of his hand by accident or whatever that happened like in the older Spider-Man. Like if this was like, bam, he's got powers. He doesn't know how to deal with them or exactly why he has them. But he wakes up on this bus and he's hanging on the ceiling. I thought that was actually pretty cool.
The wake up scene when he wakes up in the morning and he breaks his alarm clock, takes the sink apart, squeezes the entire tube of toothpaste, puts the hole. That's the hole give you and the keyboard thing. That's to give you the idea that this shit is crazy. But he doesn't get huge muscles. Is that just me or does he gain muscle? Do we? Because I know, like, the first Tobey Maguire, like, that dude went from skinny, horribly altered skinny, to now massively big.
I mean, he was still pretty scrawny.
Yeah, I didn't see them bulk up. It's just, he's skinny muscled.
Yeah, he's lean muscly. And I think it works for Spider-Man. It made him not look ridiculous in his suit.
So there's a scene that where he goes in the sewer for the first time, and he spreads his webs out everywhere, and we see Connor's lab. I really got, you know, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle vibes out of that one.
They did that for real. He was actually on a whole coil of wires.
There's also a McFarlane, I think, era comic book cover that looks exactly like that scene.
I think that's the Torment scene. Are we not talking about the Torment comic? There's like multiple covers, silver, gold.
Yeah, where it's just Spider-Man in webs. Like webs all around him. Yeah, it looked almost.
That's actually one of the most iconic. So you mentioned you have a signed McFarlane. I'm actually looking at it on my wall. I'm at 9.6 on the Platinum Edition, signed by McFarlane.
I like that scene you're talking about because it's a different use of the webs, too. It's not just using them as a weapon or swing around the city. It's using his webs to literally create a web that serves a purpose, not just to look cool, although it did look very cool, but to kind of give him like a personal security system for the sewers, and then he was going to use it to track where the lizard was. And instead, all the other lizards come down and throw the whole thing off. So I thought that was a pretty neat use of webs early on, right? It's not like it's four movies in and they're not quite sure what to do with the webs to make it interesting. He's doing something here, like right from the beginning and thinking, what can I use, you know, what can I do out of the box? And so this is what he comes up with. I like that also to have kind of a smarter web use than just as a weapon.
Let me tell you, my favorite scene in this entire movie still brings a tear to my eye. When he is shot and he's going up on top of the building and he's got to get to the Oscorp and that boom operator swings everything over. You guys, that is the best scene in this entire movie. I could watch that on a TikTok video all day.
I'm glad you brought that up. That is one of my favorite scenes in this movie. But I think it speaks to really sort of who Spider-Man is, because I think every good Spider-Man movie has to have that scene where sort of the general population helps him in some way, because he's that, you know, friendly neighborhood Spider-Man. Like you had it in with Doc Ock when he's with the last trilogy where he stops the train going off the tracks and all the people are like, cover, you know, carry him back and cover his face. I feel like you kind of need to have a scene like that where people, where the actual population gets behind him, even though the cops and the newspapers don't.
Well, the cops did. The cops did. Eventually, in this particular one, Gwen Stacy's dad, that was a tough scene. And again, if we all watched the second movie, we'd know how hauntingly crazy that scene was.
So what other scenes stood out to you guys?
The high school scene, the when he's in the library and Stanley. I mean, that's probably one of the best portrayals of Stanley.
Yes, it is.
He's just janging along on when his day in Bose headphones and does not see the lizard and Spider-Man doing the thing.
That was a great scene.
There's a couple of scenes. I loved a whole bunch of scenes. I love the movie in general, but I think there's the whole Parker Flash mini plot.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, right at the start, he's getting bullied. And then after he gets his powers, he stands up to the bully and you know, it's comic booky, you know, but he schools the bully. And then later on, after Uncle Ben dies, they have that kind of catharsis between them that, you know, you get an idea of why Flash was a bully. But anyways, I thought that line, that whole plot line was great. And I especially love the dinner he's having with Captain Stacy and the family where they're serving the Branzino fish.
God, you gotta love Branzino.
Yeah. I mean, Dennis Leary in every TV show or movie is always Dennis Leary, but he is a great actor when he's playing who he is. And that scene between him and Andrew Garfield, I thought that was great, where he kind of becomes a bit of a surrogate Uncle Ben, a moral compass, because, you know, they're having that little argument about is Spider-Man good or bad. And he points out how Spider-Man's got a type. He's only going after one type of criminal, like he's on a vendetta or something. And I think that kind of snaps something in Peter and makes him realize, am I being as good as I could be, or am I doing this for other reasons?
I like Dennis's line of, do I look like the mayor of Tokyo to you?
Yeah. Well, that's the only, I don't want to say bad scene, because it wasn't bad, but that was, you know, the movie's pretty unrealistic, obviously, it's a superhero movie, but when he pieces together who the lizard is, like, that quickly, and it's almost like, it's too forced, I thought, and then he's like, I'm going to run and tell the police, like, they're going to believe a word he says, not even the fact that he's already somebody that the police really, you know, that Mr. Stacy's not a big fan of anyway, but also he just shows up with what sounds just like crazy talk trying to drive him off after he was already trying to argue that Spider-Man's a good guy, right? So it's like that whole him figuring out who the lizard really is and him going to the police, you know, almost immediately seemed a little weird, a little awkward. But most of the rest of this movie, dialogue wise and scene wise, I like the after Ben's death, how he has to kind of help Aunt May kind of keep it together, and you kind of see Sally Field acting up a storm there, which is really good. Like, I liked all those scenes there, and I really did like the Flash scenes. I was impressed with a little bit of scenes they had that actually kind of show that turnaround for Flash is a guy that just beats up on everybody and kind of puts up with Peter Parker as like, he doesn't like him, but he's not the kid. He's getting bullied all the time. He's trying to help stand up early on and then kind of becomes an enemy to slowly, you know, kind of winning his respect by showing him up at that basketball game. So I like that. So those scenes.
Yeah, I think when he was climbing, when he saw Gwen Stacy in danger at the high school, that's when instinct, that was probably the first time that true Spider-Man instinct takes over. So if you guys notice, and it happens in all of the movies, there's a scene where you can kind of see a swing of Spider-Man's powers. And again, this is real data. This is the nerdy shit. But when he sees Gwen Stacy, and obviously he cares deeply about her, and she hits him on the head, hits the lizard with the trophy, and the lizard's going to come after Kirk Connors. And then you just see him just kind of running all, like climbing all over the lizard and basically tying him down, like literally acting like a spider.
That was a cool scene.
I would argue that it was the kid in the car earlier on in the bridge scene where he has to save that kid and basically is like, he goes for it and he risks his own life well more than anything else he's done so far, letting the lizard go because this is more important to save another person. I think that's where you first see the flash of, could I be more than just trying to get vengeance for my, you know, my uncle's death?
Yeah, I think you're right on that one, Jeremy. I think Fergal, that scene in the high school, I think that was a very cool fight scene. But the tie to what you said earlier, Jeremy, about when he goes to the police station, like, didn't feel like it made sense. I read that as he just had that big fight with a lizard and realized that the lizard is beating him. He cannot take the lizard out. So he's a kid. I mean, if I'm going to find help, where do I go? The police. Even though you're right, he sounds like a crazy person.
But yeah, I think you're right too. Like, what else does a high school kid do? And you're right. He went toe to toe with the lizard and got his ass handed to him. And, you know, this is a life or death situation. Would you go to the cops?
Agreed. I would. Actually, I wouldn't, because I don't like to trust the police. I go get my brothers and friends, and we go take them out ourselves.
Yeah, but your brothers and friends don't have Spider-Man powers, so you probably wouldn't pull your friends in.
I don't know. You never can.
I can see Fergo getting all his family and friends together going to like a spider den to all get bitten by spiders in the hopes of one of them walking out with spider powers.
That's exactly how, or we would end up doing some Tony Stark shit. We'd do some Batman shit. You never underestimate the power of a generation of Goonies latchkey kids. You give us some shit, we're going to end up taking over the world. Come on, guys. You all know we're all in the same age bracket.
Now, this movie clocks in at over 2 hours, 2 hours and 16 minutes. Lengthwise, was it too long or did you want more?
I think it's definitely long. I don't know if it's too long. Like it does feel like two movies, and the first movie ends after the dinner with Captain Stacy, and he goes to the bridge and he faces off against the lizard, and then that's where the second movie starts, because up until that point, the evil villain of the story isn't the lizard, it's the evil scientist who's going to be poisoning the elderly veterans. And then the lizard goes to stop him, and then the lizard goes insane, and then it's like two different movies. There's the origin up to that point, and then it's Spider-Man versus the lizard in the second half. That's what it felt like to me.
I think it's Spider-Man versus Oscorp in the second half, because Oscorp plays so prominently. You don't need Norman Osborn not to play Oscorp. And I think ultimately at its core, while it felt like it was about the lizard, what it really was about was the power of Oscorp. And what it can do to anybody, what it did to Peter Parker's father, and what it did to Kurt Connors.
I agree. It does feel like it's two different acts, I guess, not two different movies. But also, this is, again, the first time I've seen this movie, I didn't get bored with it. I didn't have to stop and, you know, come back to it later. There's many movies we've covered that are shorter than this, where I feel like it's 17 days. This does not feel like a long movie at all. So I don't think I needed a lot more necessarily, because I don't know what else you'd pad out that wasn't overly needed. But I think 2 hours for this actually works okay.
I'm just going to sit here and agree, nod my head approvingly. I wish Jeremy, you could see me nod my head very approvingly.
I can.
We can see you. You just can't see us.
Oh, no, no. So you guys could be.
Yeah, you don't control slapping. Other people's cameras.
No, I'm sorry. So you guys could both be giving me the middle finger right now. And I have no idea. But I'm sitting here smiling like a dad. Hey, everybody. Oh, okay.
Yeah, I think the movie is a good length. You're right, Jeremy. It doesn't feel like a long movie, but at the same time, new Jeremy, I can see, you know, it does have a, I don't want to say a tonal shift, but there's a lot of meat that's been added to it. And it could easily have been just two separate movies. Now, I do know from doing some research on this that the reason for the reboot was because they want to shift away from the old sort of like slapsticky previous trilogy.
Sam Raimi. You could just say they wanted to shoot away from Sam Raimi. They don't like Sam. That was stupid, number one. Bad choice. I'm just going to call it out. But can we just say what it is? They didn't want Sam Raimi because Evil Dead wasn't good enough.
But they wanted to go a darker tone and also more quippy.
Well, that and Tobey Maguire was like 75. They're like, we got to get another Spider-Man in here. He wasn't that old. But
and they wanted, because the Batman success, and they wanted to go down that path and make it a little darker. So my question for you guys is, did they succeed on making this a darker, quippier movie than the previous trilogies?
I don't think there was a whole lot of quips happening that I remember, other than the one scene when Spider-Man is in the car and he's you know firing the web to keep the guy in the car. That is a quippy moment.
No, the high school was quippy when he was like, "Oh, it's the lizard." He was kind of quippy at that point.
Okay, yeah,
yeah, yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it's definitely a darker shift from the third Raimi one. That one was just, it was horrible. That left a bad taste in everybody's
mouth. Are you talking about Black Suit Spider-Man?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, come on,
little gothy, you know, hair over the eyes, Spider-Man. No, thank you. Ah,
there's memes all day on the dance routine, although it was gothy. And the fact that you know gothy means that you could help me to come up with a suit if we needed to fight a bad guy like the Lizard. That's a good thing.
Are you saying, Fergal, your superhero image of yourself is gothy?
No, but I mean, you know, if we're going to go Batman, then, I mean, he does have a bit of a goth type situation. So I don't paint my eyebrows, although that would be.
So you go full emo on us?
Well, actually, I don't have to paint my eyebrows. I'm at an age where they're just dark on their own. So
lack of sleep. Best makeup ever.
You're going to have to do some work to grow your bangs down over your eyes, though.
Oh, yeah, I would have to do that. Oh, that's a little tough.
Yeah.
That's tough. It only grows into bald or Bill Cosby. It doesn't have anything in between.
How about the special effects? So this movie is a combination of practical effects as well as CGI. They didn't lean too heavy in either direction, but did they pull off a realistic Spider-Man?
What was practical? Chris, you know all this stuff. What was practical?
Well, the suit, he's actually, you yourself mentioned he was on those cables of the sewer. Most of that stuff was practical.
But like when he made the little web shoes, was that practical? I know when it got solid and he was like, ding, that was practical, but I'm wondering. Because the reason I say that is that often movies, you can tell where they spend their budgets, right? Like CG is expensive. So I think this movie was in the very weird state where CG was being employed everywhere. And it was, you know, people were throwing money at left and right. So everything was good in CG. This was the only thing I would be concerned about was the tail. Like when he had the tail in his hand, that was a bit weird. Other than that, there was not a bad thing on this movie.
Yeah, I think, I mean, again, it's not that old. It's 2012. It's not like it's like from 1988 where everything looks like a bad CG, you know, bad 3D video game. It looks good. All the CG looks good. The Lizard looks good. A lot of the time you'd be worried about a character like that would either look too cartoony or like the Thing. We just did Fantastic Four recently, and I think the Thing at the time, you're like, oh, this is bad. Where it's not as bad as I remember, but that's what I walked out of the theater at the time thinking was that was a horrible thing. I think the Lizard looks really good. And it doesn't look completely CG, even though it clearly is. So, I think they did a good job with the effects. But again, this is not like a low-budget superhero movie. This is a high-budget superhero movie.
Yeah, it's $230 million.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought the effects looked awesome. The bridge fight was great. Like, the hanging of the cars on the web, awesome.
Just the swinging. The swinging looks good. It's hard to make the swinging look where it doesn't look like a goofy cartoon or the PlayStation. But it looks really good.
The sound that it made when it came out of the shooter was just awesome. That with the music just really digs in. As I said, this Spider-Man, I think, you know, and again, we make fun of Spider-Man 3, Raimi, but like that whole, when he's getting beat up on that thing by the Sandman, that was, you know, it was like he's fighting for his will. I just thought they did a great job of giving that same spirit to this new Spider-Man version. And I thought this was like, actually, I thought this was for the 2000s kids. Right? Like, this is the millennial version, or isn't that? I mean, because we're Gen. Am I Gen X on my own? I don't think
you're Chris. X still.
You're an X.
So, are you not an X? I mean, I'm not a boomer, but are you? I would assume that the gentlemen on this line are all X's.
Yeah. Okay. I'm an X. Yeah.
Perfect. Yeah, I'm triple X.
You are triple X.
That goes into what your high school, high school story.
That was my stage name for a while.
Stop lying. Really? Wow.
Chris Pipeland Roberts. Best name ever.
Ah, those were the days.
I'm sorry. Did you just say Chris Pipeland Roberts?
Yep. That was his name. It's in the yearbook. It's in the yearbook. Oh,
that is almost goodness. As good as I'll have a Fergal hold the mayo. Just leave it alone. Just let it go. It's phenomenal.
Speaking of origin stories, this is an origin story. How did they pull off a good one for once?
I want to hear Jeremy because I'm a fan of the show and I've listened to many other of your origin story movies and I'd love to hear Jeremy's take.
So I actually like this origin story because it's fairly fast. Again, you have the bus stop scene where he wakes up or the bus scene where he wakes up and has these powers he doesn't really have control. And then it's him learning how to use them. Yes, the warehouse scene's a little over the top, but I actually kind of like it for Spider-Man because again, he's supposed to be a high school kid. He was skateboarding earlier. He's got that like, he's going to be excited about having these powers and learning how to really use them. So the fact that, other than the fact that he's in clearly big enough city around where you get a big warehouse like that, other than that, I really like the origin part. And also, Spider-Man himself is the kind of character that, even though, I guess you could have said those previous Spider-Man movies happened, the whole point of having a reboot for me is that you want Spider-Man to always be younger. You want that high school into early adult Spider-Man. You don't want necessarily the 40-year-old man Spider-Man in a movie. I mean, I know in some of the comics, you can have some older Spider-Man that are actually interesting, but you're not trying to target a much larger audience. You're trying to target comic fans that are already into the character. I think you want that reboot of Spider-Man every, 10 years or so to have a new actor doing it that's younger to keep that going. So I like this origin because it wasn't really slow and it wasn't that slow fumble of figuring out his powers. He had to watch while he gets at the grocery store and he picks up the cup when he's with Dr. Connors, right? That was like the only thing that was like that where it was like, oh, he caught something real quick. Oh, nice reflexes. Like, yeah, thanks, right? But it wasn't this really awkward, almost puberty of power. I liked the way this origin story worked. And for Spider-Man, I'm kind of a sucker for his origin story. I could, much like Batman, I can watch their origins in every one of their movies, despite that I don't need it. But in this case, because you have a new Spider-Man, for the next era of Spider-Man, you still need it. And I also like that this origin was slightly different, right? Every Spider-Man has a slightly different version of himself. The 2002 Spider-Man, he would shoot the webs out of his wrist. This Spider-Man built the little machines. Like, they have these little differences that I enjoyed. So I did not mind it in this movie.
One thing before we move on, Jeremy, you said something that I feel is a great t-shirt. You said puberty of power.
Yeah. I heard that too. And I was going to ask a question too. That's great. I loved it. Power.
How about the power of puberty?
Well, that's sweet. Different. The power of puberty is a different whole story. I don't need that.
Can you explain puberty of power?
So like in the Spider-Man 2002, right, as a comparison to this, he's bitten by the spider and then it's a lot of him like fumbling around. Like he's unable to control his powers. He shoots a web by accident. He doesn't really know why. It's like this goofy, like, oh, I can't believe I can do these things. I don't care for the slow unraveling of your powers, right? It unless it makes sense for the story, right? And you can make it work if you write a good script. But if you don't, it just comes across as this really goofy, like a reason to do slapsticky moments in a movie that doesn't necessarily need them. Or embarrassing moments where he's like, oh, I can't believe this happened. None of that happens here other than on the bus. And when it does happen on the bus, it's fast and it's right to the point. And then he realizes quickly, like, oh, I can do some, I don't know why my hands will not release from this woman's shirt and I can't get off the post and other stuff. But instead, he's getting that spider sense to do these like counter kicks and counterattacks without really realizing it's happening. And it looks really cool. Puberty of power, I was thinking of just like the slower kind of bleh of power where you slowly learn what your powers are in an awkward fashion. This doesn't quite have that. And I appreciate it. Are you talking
about the spitball, Jeremy? Like when, from your first one, he's like that spitball's going through.
Just in general, like just fumbling through. Anytime it's a younger person getting superhero powers, there's always scenes. I do enjoy the Marvel TV shows that they put out generally, but like Miss Marvel has like, everything she learns is this like, oh, I can't believe I can do this. And there's always like, it's like she accidentally has this power and is like, whoa, while things happen.
She's a 12-year-old girl though. She's like a...
And he's what, 15, 16 in this movie? It's not like he's a lot older.
But he was from a different time frame. These young
point
people
is that we don't have to have every hero do that. And I'm glad in this case, it's a better version of I'm learning my powers quickly as opposed to what I just explained as puberty of power.
The only thing I would say about the origin story is even at the time, everybody on the planet who was going to watch this movie knew the origin story. And I am happy with the MCU reboot that they did not bother trying to retell that story again. I think they need to treat it like James Bond. And if you're going to introduce a new actor every 10 years or so, fine. But we don't need to reboot it every time. Just keep going.
That I will 100%. That is probably, Tom Holland is definitely of Tobey Maguire-esque original Spider-Man. He's got that je ne sais quoi. Ah, I used a French word. I found a way to use that in a sentence today. I think he's got that. I think the whole
baguette.
And that, ladies and gentlemen, was from Pipe Layer Roberts.
The other thing I would say is, and I can't believe I'm saying this. If you're going to do the new actor and replace a superhero and not do the origin, that's the only good thing I can say about Batman and Robin that we just watched a while ago, too, is that they don't spend the first half an hour explaining where Batman got his powers. Instead, they just throw things at you that don't make any sense. But at least they go, yeah, you know who Batman is. Let's get started. And I appreciate that, too, when it's done.
The only thing you appreciate about that movie.
That's no, correct. No, there is many things to appreciate.
And the gangs. Them. I like the weird gangs. Well, we're not talking about Batman and Robin. Let's move on.
That's what this movie is missing. Coolio is not in this movie.
Oh, that would have been, Bobby Brown would have been a great addition. He could have been holding a door open to some building. Like at Gwen, like Captain Stacy's building. If he said he was uncomfortable by the doorman, it should have been an older version of Bobby Brown. That would have made my childhood happy. Would have brought my inner kid out.
I think this is a great origin story. I think they did a really good job with it. I wasn't bored by it. You know, you're right. Everyone knows the origin story of Spider-Man, but I think it was because it was tied so well to the Lizard.
Yes.
I didn't mind it so much because it was so, and it was so important to the story.
And also I think if you put different actors in there, it is not a good origin story. I like the caliber of actors that played part in that story. Sold that because there's not a lot of Spider-Man in the first half of that movie. It is a whole lot of Peter Parker, Aunt May, Uncle Ben, and that. And you don't really see Spider-Man to the second half of the movie. And I you need good actors to carry a superhero movie where there isn't a superhero for a good chunk of it.
The script for this, minus the origin story part, was actually going to be Spider-Man 4. And they actually had slated out how much money they were to spend on Tobey Maguire and the whole crew, but it was way too much. So they actually got these guys at a steal, these actors for this film.
Yeah.
So why don't we talk a little about sort of what could have been? But there is one line they did cut from the movie, which I wish they had not come from it. And I think, Jeremy, I think you would appreciate this. So according to the director, Mark Webb, that during the sewer scene, when they're fighting each other, Lizard and Spider-Man, who's supposed to be very quippy, actually had the line, "You know, you kind of look like a Goomba."
That's terrible.
That would have been terrible.
That would have been perfect.
And they cut it because not because it was bad, but because they thought they'd get sued.
I mean, Nintendo.
He also looks like a Goomba. Goomba looks like a mushroom. That's terrible. That's not a good comparison at all.
But isn't it that like the Goombas from the Mario Brothers movie?
Well, sure. But no one, let's be honest, no one in 2012 was like, I wish they would reference the terrible 1989 Super
Mario Brothers. Are you really talking about the guy who did Who Framed Roger Rabbit, those Goombas?
Yeah.
That's got Dennis Hopper in it, where he's like, they're going back to pterodactyl with little small heads and big bodies?
Yeah.
John Leguizamo. Wow. Yeah.
We're taking it back.
This movie was originally have two different villains with the Lizard. They're going to have the proto-goblin, so like an early version of him, I guess, and then a character who I do not know who this is, and Fergal helped me with this one, Big Wheel.
I'm sorry, why am I helping you with your big wheel?
Not my big wheels. I've got several of those. I'm talking about the character
Keep on
Big
turning.
Wheel, who I've never heard of.
That would make two of us.
I'm looking it up. I've
never heard of the Spider-Man villain.
Big wheel looks literally like a guy that's in a giant metal wheel. Like
that would be no different than Kangaroo Man.
Because
there's a guy in the Marvel Comics, I actually have the issue in mint condition, where with the introduction of Kangaroo Man, which is literally a man who jumps like a kangaroo and looks like a kangaroo.
Wow, another reference, Fergal, you did not know. I mean, you might have to go back to school for this one.
I might.
Nobody knew Big Wheel. I had to look it up. It's not like I was like, oh, I know Big Wheel. I looked it up while we were talking. So
Paladin's a bad guy for Spider-Man, too.
Now, what about Handjob Johnny? He's a bad guy.
He's really a bad guy. He makes a lot of problems.
See, if you said Big Wheel in terms of a Spider-Man villain, and I had to guess, I would have thought he would have been somebody involved in like Tombstone's gang, because he always had, you know, gangsters with those kind of silly names
Tombstone.
Like that. Who I think would have made a good Spider-Man villain.
Yeah, Tombstone would have been cool.
Tombstone would have been dope. Actually, he was in Luke Cage, if I'm not mistaken. He was in the Netflix series Luke Cage, was he not?
Which is a bomb-ass series.
Which is a bomb-ass series! The whole Defenders thing. Sorry, we're getting off topic. Let's get back to Spidey.
I was looking at other people that were thinking about casting for some of these roles, and actually Spider-Man, because they knew they were going to replace Tobey Maguire, there were a dozen of them. So I ignored most of them, but I thought some were kind of interesting. One was Zac Efron.
Maybe.
No.
I think he would have been okay, but yeah. I mean... Not like, oh man, I can't believe I missed out, but at the same time, it wouldn't have been a disaster.
How about Daniel Radcliffe?
No.
Oh, no.
No.
Well past Harry Potter fan.
It wouldn't have mattered because you would only see Harry Potter on that
screen. That's exactly right. That's exactly. You would ask him to go, Hectus Patronus.
Ooh. Yeah. How about Robert Pattinson?
No, yes. Because then we wouldn't have had Pattinson.
He did amazing in that, but I think because he did amazing in that, he could be amazing in this version of Spider-Man.
Yeah, he would have been fine, but
Destiny had other plans for Pattinson. That's the problem. That's where it was going. So it was never going to be about Robert Pattinson.
How about Joe Jonas?
Who is that?
One of the Jonas Brothers, man. Come on.
No, really?
But no, I mean, he would have been fine as Peter Parker, I guess, but I don't think he would have been as good as this.
Is that the Jonas that married the Indian woman, Pyruka, whatever, Chaka?
No.
Because that was a smart Jonas. He married a...
No, that's the Jonas that married Dark Phoenix.
Indian girl. Oh, that's the crazy chick who's got him in court in London and the U.S. Yep. See? Not the smart Jonas.
Last one. Michael Cera.
What?
No, I'm glad it was Michael Cera. I'm glad. No.
All I keep thinking about is that movie, This Is the End, when he's like, who took my Coke? Or who took my phone? And then he gets killed.
He's too
awkward.
Yeah, intentionally awkward. Like, it's funny when he's used right, but when not, it's painful. And he doesn't have
muscles. He has absolutely no ability to make a muscle.
Yeah, I can't see him being somebody who you want to have rescue you.
just let me die.
Yeah, like if you're being mugged in the middle of the street and he comes up and saves you, and then you're in a dark alley and this is the face you're looking at. Thanks, but no thanks.
That might be tough.
Now let's change gears a little bit. Dr. Connors, you only had one other option besides they went with Michael Fassbender.
No, we're gonna channel back Destiny again. Destiny kissed him towards Magneto.
I think he could have pulled it off.
I think he could have, but I do think that, and I know I'm saying this wrong, Reese Ifans, I think is how you pronounce his name, or incorrectly pronounce his name. He did a great job as the Lizard, because he also, I mean, he's recognizable, but he's not, although neither is Michael Fassbender at that point in time, I think, where he is as recognizable. But he did a great job as the Lizard. I would hate to see someone else do it.
That's it. There's the character embodiment. That's why they brought the Lizard back in the new Spider-Man movie. What? I'm sorry. Just adding 2 + 2.
Jonah Jameson was actually in one of the original plots of the movie, one of the original screenplays. So they had thought about who they were going to put in that role for Jonah Jameson. One was Sam Elliott.
Well, maybe. I mean, Sam Elliott's great in everything. So
it would be about that guy. It's hard to picture Jonah Jameson as anybody other than the actor who did play him.
Yes. Yeah, 100%.
He was so, it was like you reach into the comic book and pulled the comic book character out and put him on screen and made him believable.
All
like,
versions there's nobody of, better. He played in the new one and the old one.
Yes, he did. Yep.
That's J.K.
Yes.
Simmons. He is J.K. literally Simmons.
He is J. Jonah Jameson. Yeah, he is J.
And, yep, and he's no, also, for sure. I think he's also the voice of J. Jonah Jameson in the Spider-Man video games that have been coming out over the last few years.
Too. Wouldn't surprise me. Last one, R. Lee Arney.
I'm sorry. As
J. Jonah Jameson?
Yes.
Nah.
Who are we talking about?
R. Lee Ermey.
He's like the drill sergeant guy and a couple of
He's a drill sergeant in everything. That's all he ever
Full Metal Jacket.
You talking about the old guy? Yeah. You talking about the guy, this is my rifle, there's none like it, yep. you shall love this. Oh, that guy? No way. Right? I mean, that's just, no.
For Gwen Stacy, there were dozens and dozens of other ones out there, but there were a couple I thought were interesting that popped up. One was Amber Heard.
Yeah.
Turned out she was crazy, so we'll leave her to the side. No, was she crazy? Is it Amber Heard, yes. Johnny Depp's ex-wife?
Yeah.
I thought she was crazy.
But at the time, she's a great actress.
Yeah, but that's what brings out the crazy. That's what brings out the crazy.
Lindsay Lohan is an actress.
She was definitely crazy. So I think she's in Freaky Friday now, which tells you exactly where her career is going.
That's a remake of a sequel to a movie she was already in before.
Freakier Friday, yes.
Yeah, there you go. I think any of those people could have done it, because at the time, I remember thinking when this was announced, I was like, oh, not her. She was in like everything for a while, so I was like, of course Emma Stone's in this movie, right? That's how I thought about it, but she did a really good job. But at the time, I was like, ugh. So we're all saying about these other people, but I would have probably felt exactly the same.
Now, I don't know where her career was at the time, but Anna Kendrick was on the list.
I think, wasn't she doing Pitch? Oh, now I'm going to look her up.
Yeah, she was in Pitch Perfect.
Pitch Perfect, the old Trolls movies.
Oh, yeah.
She would have been fine too, I think.
But I don't know what she was doing at the time, so
somebody would have got some singing out of this movie if that was. No, she came out in Pitch Perfect in the same year Amazing Spider-Man comes in, so she made a choice.
There are 4 directors they tap before with their final settling on Webb, not settling, but choosing Webb. That's a perfect name for this movie. And I want to know, would you want to see their take on Spider-Man? First one, James Cameron.
No. He'd need $1 billion budget. And it would be a 4-hour movie.
I think it'd be boring. It would be a boring Spider-Man.
If you come up with Michael Bay as your second choice, yes, please. Because let's blow some shit up.
Next, Wes Anderson.
How awkward would that be?
Oh, my God.
And that's
God.
Where you have Michael Cera as Spider-Man.
Yeah.
That's the Michael Cera Spider-Man
with Wes Anderson. You know what just came to my mind was Nick Cage as Superman.
Yeah.
In the Tim Burton Superman, that literally just popped because that's exactly what I thought of. When you're like, Wes, I'm like, that's the Secret Life of Steve Zissou. So that would have been Michael Cera as Spider-Man. Yeah.
Yep. That's, and I was going to say, and for the police chief, for Emma Stone's father, you would have Bill Murray. It would work out fine, but it would be a completely different movie that probably eight people would like. But I might be one of them. I do like Wes Anderson film.
So another one they thought of was David Fincher.
Oh, my goodness.
The Twin Peaks guy?
Yeah.
Not the Twin Peaks guy. That's not David Fincher.
David Fincher was director of Seven.
Yeah.
Yeah, they would have got a dark version of Spider-Man.
Yeah, he did Zodiac, Seven, The Social Network.
Maybe
Fight Club.
Maybe Fincher needed to do Spider-Man to kind of get a cleanse of the darkness out of him.
Fergal, I have to just point out, you mentioned the Twin Peaks. That's David Lynch. How incredible would that have been? That would have been one to see. A different, definitely a different version of Spider-Man.
Probably more into the superior Spider-Man realm. That would have been a great story if you used David Lynch as the director of that movie.
Last one was Kathryn Bigelow. If you're not familiar with who she is, she did The Hurt Locker.
Well, no, she did Point Break. So, you know, she's got
skills.
Yeah, she'd make a good movie. Yeah, that'd be, I would go 30. See that movie. Yeah, I'd go see that movie.
So, guys, what did they do right about this movie and what could they have done better?
They did everything right. I like the movie. Let's move on. I think it's amazing. Nothing bad. Nothing bad.
The casting was amazing. The writing was amazing. The acting was amazing. Special effects were amazing for that time. I agree. Can't do better than that.
I hate to just be the guy who agrees, but I had not, again, seen this until this viewing for this podcast. And I was kind of blown away with how much I liked it and how much I wasn't. You know, like, oh, I can't believe they did this here, or how dated a certain reference was, or anything. Like, I think it was actually done very well.
So, Jeremy, now that you've seen this movie for the first time, how did you feel about did you see the new MCU Spider-Man, the third one, with the cameos of all three Spider-Men on there?
No, I have not seen it in full. I've seen the cameos and I've seen the clips on the internet, but I have not watched the whole movie. As we've talked about many times, most of these Marvel movies post Iron Man 2, I'm behind on, so I will eventually watch all of them. But I've seen spotty ones in between there, but I do watch every one of the TV shows. My logic makes no sense.
So for those who have seen the third of the new Spider-Man movies, did you enjoy the cameo of Andrew Garfield?
Yes.
Yeah.
That was part of the reason I opened my store, because after the pandemic, having worked in healthcare and seeing things that they didn't report on in the news as a banker lending these people money, when you went to that movie, it was like Marvel somehow was able to recreate the magic of Endgame. And that was magic in that movie. And they just like completely recreated it after the pandemic. Now, again, who could have predicted the future, right? And they got a lot of work if they're going to recapture that magic. But my God, at that moment, that whole storyline, it was just like, it was like everything that you want to see in every type of situation happening right in front of you.
Yeah, it was, everyone's nostalgia was triggered. It was perfect for everybody. It's like if they did a Star Trek movie and, you know, Captain Kirk, Janeway, Sisko, you know.
Didn't they do
if
that?
They were all.
I'm sorry. I mean, that's around Tik-Tok. Didn't they actually do that? Like, you're talking about Sisko, Janeway, Kirk. I mean, not Kirk, but Picard. They did that. They brought every damn starship from every damn where against somebody.
It's Picard season 3.
We can always look for.
They weren't all in there, but they ratcheted up the nostalgia. But Leah Roberts
knows what season. Do you know what episode?
It's the whole season.
It's just the whole season.
Yeah, it was a terrible season, but yeah, it's a nostalgia season.
Yeah,
I think you should get a tattoo that says Pipe Leah.
You seem to think I don't have that tattoo. It's right across my back, shoulder to shoulder, Pipe Leah.
Like wings.
Like
that
wings.
Is so dope.
That's in a wicked font.
Ah, man.
Is that David Wilcox song laying pipe like your theme song?
So, guys, should people go find this movie?
Yes. I mean, this is well worth the watch. This is not a bad Spider-Man movie. And again, you will get, if there's one thing that this director did, which I gotta say, there's not, it's hard to kind of capture a certain level of magic that emotionally evokes you a little bit. They've done it in certain Spider-Man movies. The original, I think Macy Gray got me all doing the hippie hop dancing in the first movie, The World Date, when she was, I was loving that stuff. But this movie, with the whole boom swing, that was amazing. It still is the most amazing scene in that movie.
Yeah, if you're a fan of superheroes, you'll love the movie. If you're a fan of Spider-Man, you'll love the movie. If you are not a person who loves superhero movies and hates them, you will probably still love this movie.
Well, what I like about all these Spider-Man movies generally is that they still have superhero powers as a special thing. It's not that they're all over the world, and therefore this is just your superhero, or, you know, oh, it's in trouble. These are like these other superheroes. There's still like the idea that he is a special individual in this area. There's not a lot of comparisons to make, right? So I like Spider-Man, and I think, yes, this is a great Spider-Man movie. Now I want to watch the rest of them.
I personally think people should find it. This is my second time seeing this movie, and the second time watching, I was still enjoying it. So that's got a lot of strength. And we've watched a lot of movies, especially recently, where I will never want to watch those movies again. So this one, see it again. In closing, guys, how would you rate it? Thumbs up, thumbs down?
I would rate it like this. How about that? That is just
the OG. It's perfect for an audio medium podcast to show everyone your hand gesture.
I did show everyone my hand gesture.
Two middle fingers. That's
weird. I did. I gave two. So let me very clearly describe it for the non-visual audience. I gave a very detailed.
I think it's the shocker.
Toby McGuire web sling situation, which could actually be an Andrew Garfield, but because I'm slightly old, I threw a little Toby McGuire. And while you can't see it, the group can, and they love it. They're player hating. It's okay.
I heard the little web shooter go thwip.
That's exactly right.
Fergal, we're normally okay with some of the jokes you make, but that was a little too sexual.
Which one was that?
Oh boy. I'm going to just go ahead and move on from that. I think this is one of the few thumbs up I'm giving, but I'm giving is a thumbs up through a lizard hand that you peel off, and it's a thumb up behind it.
This is a full thumbs up for me. This is a must see movie. It's awesome.
Yeah, I'm going to agree with you guys. Thumbs up all the way around. So guys, before you head on out of here, new Jeremy, where can people find you?
You can find me anywhere you're listening to podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Acast, even on YouTube if you like YouTube music. So Grimdark History Podcast is where you can find me.
I don't think you told anyone. What is the Grimdark History Podcast?
So the Grimdark History Podcast is all about what I call the intersection between history and popular fiction. You've probably at some point watched a movie, played a video game, read a book, whatever it is that set itself in our own history. And I found when I was watching those movies, you know, they do something on screen and I ask a question, did they really do that? Did that actually happen? And I spend half the movie looking up shit on Google. So that's what the podcast is about. What's the real history that happens in these pop fiction?
See, I can appreciate that because my next project, which was a comic book and is now morphed into a book, is all about what happens when you see something and you want to learn more about it and there's just not enough shit about it. And that's what I created, was a complete storyline, how I'd want to see it, and told in just such a unique way. So yeah, they've got this new book coming out. I'll be checking it out before the end of the year.
Sweet. And Jeremy?
You can always find me here every 2 weeks talking about movies, but also every other week on the Retrovaniacs podcast, where we talk about old video games, because I don't like anything current. It has to be 20 years or older.
And Fergal Amayo?
Gotham Med Comics. Get your nerd on. Hanging out. We're going to do this thing.
And for me, you can always find me at Off Panel Creations, where we're building some piece of nerdy furniture. I thank you, our listeners, for spending some time with us today. And if you can tell me who you prefer, Mary Jane or Gwen Stacy, just send us a note over at movie-smash.com, and we'll see you in a couple weeks. Thank you again for listening, and I hope you enjoy the show. This has been Movie Smash with Chris Roberts, Jeremy Parmentier, and Fergal Amayo, produced by me, Chris Roberts, executive produced by Off Panel Creations, LLC. Movie clips provided by the respective studios. You can rate and review the show at Apple Podcasts and Spotify. You might even find your review read on a future episode. Got a question for us? Visit us at movie-smash.com and send us a note. It too can be read on a future episode. If you haven't already, please subscribe to Movie Smash wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you can edit it out when I tell you the truth.